G'day, Vivian. How are you?
Oh, hi, Annie. It's actually the Climate Action Show. It's been all this year. It's called the Climate Action Show because we just do activists and campaigners.
Yeah, sorry, mate. It hasn't been updated on the 3CR board. There you go. We better give them a shove to make sure that they change it. Climate Action Show it's still at 5 p.m.
Right.
on Monday, which is good. Now, you, of course, this is your bread and butter, and I followed one stream, but you were following quite another stream of activist information coming out of Glasgow during this past week. Can you tell our listeners what was going on?
Yeah, well, I'm getting used to being up at 2 a.m. to tune in to the other side of the world, but we've been on the road to Glasgow. I did 5 weeks of programming before the COP26, so I was getting quite elevated about the expectations, and of course they have been disappointed because, you know, and I don't think it should, however, be reported as a failure. You know, a lot of our media has just popped, you know, they've flown in and flown out, and they're saying it's a failure, but there's so much happening there. And what I found, I discovered, I went to a lot of the formal sessions and people are very polite there and the tone is very cautious and so on. But out in the street, I was watching this thing, it was live streaming, something called COP26 TV. George Monbiot is associated with it. It's like an online, you know, streaming these people out in the streets with a microphone, just like you do and I do, interviewing anybody. But the people were so well informed and the people were so... like a momentum you felt and the joy that they have to keep out in the street, they have to keep going. And there were all these little street theatre things, like it seemed to be like a skit. There was one with about 80 people standing around and 4 guys in lab coats who were scientists, and the MC was pretending to be Boris Johnson, you know, with all his false solutions, and they just, you know, blew out of the water his solutions. And one of them was an Australian scientist who was talking about carbon capture and storage, which we hear a lot about here. And it was just like a little street theatre thing down by the Clyde River. And then the streaming goes on and you see Extinction Rebellion people. There were doctors lying as if they were dead in front of JB Morgan Chase Bank, which is the one that is the biggest financier of the fossil fuel industry. It was so exhilarating to see that. And last Saturday, when it was the Global Day of Action, there was 100,000 people. And not just marching, not saying, you know, what do we want, da, 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 now, all that kind of tired sort of, you know, repetitive stuff that the media just makes mincemeat of. This is all fresh stuff, fresh people, fresh musicians. It's very exciting. So I just feel, and a lot of those people from around the world who've gone there to COP and who don't really feel listen to, you know, people from the Amazon, people, Indigenous people from here too, I heard them speak. They were given platforms there, and really proper platforms where a lot of people were gathered around listening. And I think that was more like, you know, breaking open this kind of democracy we have where only privileged people, usually the corporation, the sort of privileged people, get access, get in, and their will is done. Whereas here it was in the street, you could see all the other people who have other information and real life experience of, you know, environmental destruction, like in the Amazon or up here, you know, with the gas and coal mines here. They were being given a platform. I just loved that. I thought that was really, to me, that was like a sign of the future, you know, break the
I think you're exactly right. Yeah, I think you're exactly right, because when you look at the mainstream messages that are quite clearly being held together by corporate and financial interests, they are desperately trying to contain the message, and they use words like sacrifice zones and material economy, green extractivism, and it's all tied up in the bow of inequality, you know, saying that we basically need to make these sacrifices or we won't be able to have a clean future. But having all these people with their genuine messages coming in, it makes it quite clear that reducing inequality and human rights are actually absolutely central to solving the climate emergency. They're not side issues.
No. Well, you started your program mentioning people who are actually murdered, and I'd like to mention to the listeners there was one woman at COP26, she was an Amazon delegate, and her name was Claudelice Silva dos Santos, and while she was there, her camp with about 80 people, 80 families, was burned down, and people were bashed up, taken, some were taken away in trucks, others fed into the forest. And she is also a person whose brother and sister-in-law were killed 10 years ago, and they've been 10 years in that camp trying to stop illegal logging. So there's real consequences. And all this thing, I mean, I'm doing a program on the forest agreement. And when that was released, I thought, oh, great, you know, stop deforestation by 2030. Isn't that a great headline? But you can think countries like Brazil, they have no intention of doing that. They've just loosened up all the laws about landholding, making it, you know, illegal logging and ranching easier. So, you know, it's a huge battle on. But I think a lot of it is to do with the media. When I saw that live streaming, I thought those stories, you know, you can edit out bits, like you've edited out bits of those summits you went to, the alternative summit. If the media would give us some of those voices, give those people a platform, I think things would change. I can't see how else things will change because, you know, our government is impermeable, you know, our democracy.
Well, what I've noticed is, and from listening to all these different things, and I listen to sessions from workers and I listen to sessions from a whole range of groups of people, all the things that are issues here are issues in every other country. So what's going on is that the corporate and financial interests with their governments are actually engineering the same problems in every other country. So the business about representing the fact that they're actually consulting with First Nations people, bald-faced lie, not true. That is repeated right across the world. The fact that public transport, which is an answer to the issue of an addiction to individual transport units, which are a problem, they're all across the world. They're casualising, making the work insecure, selling it off. Taking away funding, as in England, the public transport system relies on ticket sales, not government support. Now, these are all being repeated all across the world. Same issues, the mining, the degradation of the asset for the shareholder dollar.
I think it's a kind of a gaslighting phenomenon. You know, it feels like gaslighting because these messages sound so good at first. You know, they sort of greenwash these ongoing business profits. You know, one of the Indigenous speakers, Pastor Ray Minicon, I heard him talking, debriefing from COP. He was still in Glasgow. And he said, oh, look, the Australian Pavilion, it's like a like a trade fair for fossil fuels, or could you call it the Twiggy Forest Show? And yet it's designed to, you know, make people feel Australia's got this go-get-it spirit.
Yeah, I know.
Get-up-and-go kind of spirit. And I had hoped that Australia would be more humiliated at COP. It was over the submarine deal, but it wasn't humiliated enough and it wasn't pressured enough and people have gone tut-tut and disapproving. But I think, you know, they're just waiting for Australia to be, you know, to go on being the huge exporter of hydrogen fuel or, you know, renewable energy without any regulation or, you know, a completely new deal for the local people. And one of the Indigenous speakers said, we didn't feel heard there. We were on panels. We were given panels. We were able to speak, but we didn't feel heard. And one of them was a woman. She's a solicitor called Virginia Marshall, Dr. Virginia Marshall. She was really impressive, and she was with this Indigenous delegation from here. And she said, look, we've got intellectual property rights over our way of dealing with land. And now the world, as climate change, is desperate for that. You know, how do you preserve the forest? How do you preserve the oceans? You know, you gave your thing about the whaling. You have to have a different relationship with it. But we can't package that in a little something that you can just take away. You have to approach us with more respect. And really listen to us.
Well, actually, there has to be an ideological paradigm shift quite clearly.
But are we capable of it? I mean, they're having a press conference just now while we're speaking, and I thought it was rather funny. They're launching a film. Indigenous people are launching a film called Learning to be Human.
a series
of documentaries, Learning to be Human. But isn't that the message? We, you know, you had just before that, Gina Hardhart. You know, he mentioned Gina Hardhart. Well, that is, we have to learn to be human. But are we going to? I don't know. I thought in the street, when I saw those street things, I was really heartened because I thought, these people have all got heart. These people are, you know, genuinely capable of shifting, and we're capable of shifting. But we don't control things, and the people who are controlling are locking out a lot of voices.
Well, now, it was interesting, one of the sections that I played today, the Malaysian woman, she was pointing out that the fact that they had a semi-dictatorship type government was actually a very strong key to allowing the bad behaviour of the Australian lithium mining company. So quite clearly, having weak and draconian governments is a preference for the corporate and financial interests at this level. The other thing that I found interesting is that by looking at the following the money, it's possible, and listening to what's happening to people on the ground, you can remove all the miasma of the greenwash. You don't have to get confused. If it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, it is a duck. And the corporates and the financiers, unless they're pressured and unless people are very focused, because this is a fight that is too big to lose, isn't it, Vivian?
Mm. Well, following the money, I think I had hoped that at least if they said that they were going to phase out coal. Well, coal's phasing itself out anyway. They're not phasing out oil and gas. And there were 500 lobbyists there from those industries. 500, that's more than some country delegation, more than the Chinese delegation, for example. 500 lobbyists for oil and gas. And they are still getting subsidies globally of $5.9 trillion.
It's a disgrace, isn't it?
Well, it's more than a disgrace. It's got to be spotlighted, and they were talking about that. They were at least talking about that. There was something called the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty, and I interviewed those people a few weeks back. But, you know, it's still a little tender shoot. It's still a tiny little gesture, I think, you know, in the great wash of what they decide. And they didn't decide to stop subsidising, you know, fossil fuels. And the other thing I wanted to talk to you about is biomass. You know, you talked about these deceptions. It's too big to lose, but the people fighting definition of biomass have been doing this for 10 or 15 years and it's still going on. It's a $51 billion industry. And I had.
Can you explain biomass? Tell us about what it is.
I just thought it was like the waste from the timber industry or something. But it's not. They're cutting down whole forests. Europe especially is a buyer. You know, Europe is looking green, putting on its ledger that it's got renewable energy because they're using wood pellets from from South Carolina, from Canada forests. You know, they're cutting down new forests, you know, like new logs to export as pellets. They pelletize it and then they send it to Europe. And that's a $51 billion industry. And I saw one banner on a sugarcane mill in Australia, and it said, "This is dead koala energy," you know, which puts it in a capsule, dead koala energy. It's not renewable energy just because the trees grow again in 100 years.
Yeah, but also the burning off. Do they know what
carbon emitting?
Yeah, that's just lunatic.
But you know, the person I've interviewed is Peg Putt, and she's an expert on that. That'll be at the end of November for listeners. If you want to tune in, Peg Putt, I'm going to look at the forestry agreement, you know, this thing of no deforesting before 2030. Well, by 2030. Well, Peg Putt puts it really clearly. She says, we have been fighting this. It's like a language problem. If you keep defining that as renewable energy, they keep exporting it.
Yeah. And doing a publicity campaign to disperse the reality.
Yeah, that's right. But let's call it dead koala energy, because it's got to have some. There's got to be not only a shift in the shift of consciousness will come, I think, from a shift in the way we talk about things and the people who talk about things. If it's different people, new perspectives become dominant, then our attitude and our action will shift. And I could see that in the street. I could see all of that in the street. And I can see that at 3CR with us, but we're still not the people in power who are just, they're like snakes, or not like snakes, but, you know, they change. They shrug off one skin and put on another one, and it looks brand new, but
well, you know, it's funny, Morrison's in election mode, and he had the temerity to talk about his great electric car plan, which was really just more money to private industry to set up bowsers, effectively, without any intelligence in regard to actually formulating a plan for ordinary people to have electric cars. I mean, good or bad, but it just shows that the people in Parliament at the moment are obviously have got the brains of peanuts, and people really need to think about where they're going to vote next time.
But I think the people with peanut brains are the ones who let them get away with it. You know, how do we let our government get away with it? How do we vote for them? How do we let our media get away with what they do? It's not good enough. We just have to, the onus is really on us, a country like Australia. We're not a dictatorship. We do have freedom of speech. We do have, you know, Parliament.
Stand up.
Activate it. No, we have to energise it and activate it and be much more savvy. Like those people, I could see that, you know, this rally that had all these little sideshows where you could just go and inform yourself about all these different areas, people getting up and speaking. It was fabulous. And in Australia, we've got so many people doing that sort of work, but we're still very polite and very, you know, doing things within the guardrails and everything. It's too slow. We have to be much more onto it.
All right.
I loved attending the COP, really. A lot of it I did love, but a lot of it was theatre in the wrong sense. You know, it was that poignant young child from the Amazon speaking. You know very well the Amazon's being cut down.
We have to finish it there. We're right up to the wire. Thank you very much. Very informative. And everybody needs to listen up to your program, The Climate Action Show, 5 p.m. on Mondays. Yes. See you,
mate. Podcasts are all there, Climate Action. Bye-bye. Thanks.